From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Before we get to this week's episode, I wanted to provide you with a short update on some postal news. First, last week, President Trump submitted to the Senate three new nominees to the Postal Service Board of Governors. They are Jeffrey Brodsky, William Gallo, and Robert Steffens. Brodsky is co-founder and managing director of Quest Turn Around Advisors, a management firm that provides advice, interim management, or liquidation of companies facing financial crisis. Gallo has been CEO of a medical products company, and Steffens was a former executive at Marvel Entertainment, the corporate home of The Avengers, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Wolverine. It does not appear that either of the nominees have any history in postal matters or logistics. Also, last week, Postmaster General Steiner disclosed to numerous news media that the Postal Service has hired the consulting firm Alvarez & Marsal to help the agency address its financial problems. Alvarez & Marsal advises companies on corporate restructuring and turnaround strategies. This disclosure was made in tandem with the Postmaster General's sounding the alarm that the Postal Service may run out of money within a year. Finally, also last week, NAPS President Ivan Butz participated in a roundtable conducted by the Congressional Postal Service Caucus, which covers such issues as the Postal Service's financial condition and operational challenges, and President Butz addressed those issues. All this news is merely a prelude to NAPS's upcoming legislative conference and trip to the Capitol during the week beginning March 15th. So with me today is none other than Ivan Butz, president of the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Welcome back to NAPS Chat, Ivan.
Thank you, Bob. This has been a while.
There's a lot going on in the postal world these days. It makes a lot of people anxious, including postal employees. You've had conversations with the Postmaster General Steiner over the last 9 months, and he's going to be speaking to the NAPS Legislative Conference, where about 500 postal supervisors, managers, and postmaster activists will be attending. Could you talk about our relationship with the Postmaster General, and what do you expect him to address at our conference next week?
Well, Bob, let me start by this. I'm not sure what our relationship is with our current PMG. I did meet with him as an introductory meeting when he first was appointed PMG. I have not met with him since that time. We have invited him to our board meetings, which he has declined to come to and speak. He is coming to speak at our LTS, which I'm sure the attendees will be grateful to have him there to hear what his vision is for this postal service. I think as we look at where we are, we have to look at it as it's written. The article in Bloomberg, in the bankruptcy section on the Bloomberg website, sort of telling in his remarks that the postal service, that we've been bankrupt for years, is kind of telling the nominees for the Board of Governors in their history. Is telling the hiring of this firm, the third, I believe, firm on this firm is restructuring on restructuring companies. Again, is also telling. So I'm hopeful that we hear some honesty on this vision of where Mr. Steiner's leadership is looking to take the Postal Service. But you know, if we're left to our own devices, just to look at the stories and read what's being said, it doesn't paint a good picture, at least not for me.
The picture is an old picture. I could recall around 16 years ago, then Postmaster General Potter engaged with not one but three consultants in an attempt to restructure the Postal Service. Didn't turn out so well. In fact, the recommendations that were implemented by the Postal Service actually impaired performance, particularly consolidation of lots of plants, and they had to address, I know you've spoken about this in the past, that they had to slow down the mail to accommodate the plant consolidations, and I mm-hmm. could recall that from years ago. So is this new? Is this something? This is not something that we've never confronted before, this type of situation.
Absolutely not. As you rightfully said, we went through it with Mr. Potter. We actually, and then Mr. Donahoe, he carried on with that engagement. Even right now, we're dealing with the Incenture contractors working inside the Postal Service. And so, you know, and now we have this other firm coming on. You know, I go back to Donahoe after he took over again with the same kind of methodology as Mr. Potter did. But then at the end of his tenure, his parting comments was that the post office cannot cut its way to sovereignty. Well, that's exactly what he did during his term, but that's exactly what we've been seeing subsequently from his departure through Megan, through Lewis, now with Mr. Steiner. It appears to be it continues on.
Around a year ago, we were worried about DOGE infiltration of the Postal Service and what they could recommend to Louis DeJoy, the former Postmaster General, whether or not he limited postal exposure to DOGE or not is, you know, is an argument to be made. The retention of this latest consultant group, is this part and parcel of that DOGE exercise?
I don't know. I think I will agree. You didn't say you didn't know, but I will say I do believe that Lewis did limit the impact of DOGE during their time in here. We didn't see the extreme effects that other federal agencies seen, but nevertheless, we still saw effects that are impacting our members and impacting America because of the services. I mean, on one hand, he helped, but on the other hand, the post office on its own is implementing some things that still are I would consider DOGE-like.
The day after Postmaster General Steiner speaks to us at our legislative conference, he is going to travel up to Capitol Hill and testify before the House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee on Government Operations, chaired by Pete Sessions, who we have a very good relationship with, and you personally have a very good relationship with. What would you want to hear the Postmaster General talk about to Congress?
I would like him to kind of share his vision, open and honestly, on what his plans are. Again, you know, we hear his public statements are one thing, but then when we look at if you look at the actions and look at what's coming out with the appointments, it points to something different. So, you know, I think there needs to be a kind of coming together of what really is the objective of this Postmaster General in terms of the future of the Postal Service. I mean, you know, he talked about gaining business and talked about this last mile, which I do agree. I agree that this last mile has always been untapped resource that we have that no one else has because no one else is willing to do it. And we've never over our history really tapped into that revenue potential that's within that last mile. But again, it takes more than just talking about it. You know, it takes some steps of making it happen. It takes some commitment to resources to make it happen. And it takes some commitment to growth, business growth, to make it happen. And those things we don't see, but we do hear to talk about it.
Yeah, because at the most recent Board of Governors meeting, they spoke that expenses were held in check or at around the inflation rate. However, revenue and volume fell off the cliff. Do you expect or would you want the Postmaster General to talk about strategies to grow volume and grow revenue?
Yes, I want to hear how. I mean, he said that, you know, he has some thoughts on initiatives to grow the revenue. So yeah, I would like to hear that. I want to hear how we remain sustainable through what we're seeing. Again, I think all the eggs were put in the package delivery business that somehow has now cooled off. So okay, so what is the next thing? We are losing first class volume, although it's slower than in past, but we've lost, if you look over the years, we lost a lot of first class volume. We have picked up some package volume, but so we need some initiatives to say, what are we going to do differently? What are we going to do to regain more of that package volume back? And I know there's some, you know, cost issues and things that's surrounding that. What are the alternate things that we could be doing as an agency that we need to start considering? I read somewhere last week, and they actually mentioned postal banking, and I had to laugh because, I mean, that was something we talked about over 10 years ago.
Right, and the Inspector General said there's around $9 billion in revenue that could be generated.
Absolutely,
from that.
Absolutely. So you know, I mean, here we are 12 years later, and now that's coming up again. You know, but there are also things that we got to look at doing differently. I understand passports now is done online, so that was a big chunk of business that's probably going to move away from us. Also, we're still very strong in the money order business for obvious reasons, at least for now. But you know, we could see impacts to that.
The irony is, the growth or the sustainability of the money order business can be related to those who are unbanked, because that's really their only opportunity to have some type of paper, negotiable paper, that could be passed on that isn't cash.
And that's 100% tied to those who are unbanked. So, you know, again, you know, we could be seeing impacts to that.
I want to come back to the consultants, the consultant that was retained by the Postal Service. Do you expect Congress to be interested on the cost of that contract and the terms of that contract and the timeline of that contract?
Well, for me, I'm always interested in what does it cost? What is the agency spending on all these firms or all these projects that they're tagging as cost cutting? Ultimately, what are they spending on this cost cutting? Because there's always, for me, and I come from an implant support background when I worked in the Postal Service, and I think I said this before on another podcast, everything you do has to have a return on investment. So if there is no return on investment, then it's not a smart business decision to do it. So, yeah, I would like to know what the hiring these firms over the years have cost. Not just this one, but what about the ones that we are still engaged with and the ones we have engaged with? How much money have we spent on these agencies? And like you said, the results have been negative, and at best negative, at worst been harmful to America's Postal Service.
As I recall, and I have to look at the documentation, the one of the three consultants who presented, interestingly enough, the presentation that was made with regard to the results of the three consultants back 16 years ago, it occurred in the auditorium of the National Transportation and Safety Board, which is the auditorium where if you have an airline disaster, that's where the forum is. But one of the consultants reported, and I believe this was Accenture, provided options for revenue generation. And each and every one of those recommendations were deep-sixed by everyone else within the postal hierarchy at that time.
Well, I'm not familiar with that, or I'm not recalling that. But, you know, again, it seems like very good initiatives or what appears that could be profitable is usually not the course path taken for some reason. But you know, we need to have some initiatives that is going to benefit America's Postal Service and the employees who are delivering America's mail every day. in by way of making this agency sustainable to the future. You know, there's a lot of partnerships we talked about over the years with fishing and hunting licenses and things of that nature that we could be doing. I would say, you know, again, it's one thing I understand part of the reason why, but I don't understand why other federal agencies don't mail through the Postal Service. You know, I almost aren't required to mail through the Postal Service, I should say. You know, that's one step in the right direction again, you know, but we have to kind of start thinking outside of the box as far as revenue growth goes if we're going to survive and remain sustainable for a future.
One of the consistent strategies during any type of postal reorganization, as in the past it's occurred, are consolidations, particularly of retail venues. And one of the blinking yellow lights potential retail consolidations is the recent Postal Service memorandum that certain level 18 postmaster vacancies will not be filled. These post offices, for the most part, are in the smallest communities or small full-service independent post offices. And we learned a lot from Postplan, where a considerable number of post offices were either closed or consolidated. What do you make of these level 18 postmaster vacancies that the Postal Service at this point claims they're not going to fill those vacancies?
Well, first, let me talk about Postplan. You know, Postplan, we remember, for those who are student members, really decimated our ranks among postmasters. I believe we lost over 13,000 postmasters just by that one organizational change alone. Very devastating to not only mail service, because it changed mail service as we see it today. And we probably that was probably the start of our struggles for not only sustainability, but for productivity and engagement with the American public. So this holding of level 18 jobs, you know, anytime the post office says that they were withholding the posting of jobs or reviewing jobs, you know, I think as a leader or me as the president of NAPS, have to view that with my eyes wide open and almost in somewhat skeptical way that there could be impact. There could be an organizational change behind that. And you have to really think when you start talking about these level 18 post offices, since the post office made that move and created these level 18 and 18Bs offices, there's been an ongoing issue that the post office feels that these lower level offices aren't taking in the financial revenue to sustain them as an office there. And so their mindset is not on serving America. The mindset is on what profit is this building making. But again, we all know that the post office was not incorporated constitutionally to make a profit. It was constitutionally enacted to provide a service. So that's what we've been doing for over 250 years. So now the leadership model is wants to move away from that. And so this could be another step in moving away from that, where we're going to see another devastating impact to postmasters in smaller communities in rural America. Again, as I always say, when the post office does these organizational changes and have these impacts, regardless of where the epicenter of the impact is, it's rural America that will feel the brunt of it.
If we can, let's turn to your March 5th appearance before the Congressional Postal Service Caucus Roundtable, a meeting that was chaired by Representative Nikki Baczynski and Jack Bergman, both who I would add are going to be speaking at our legislative conference next week. Could you summarize what you shared with that caucus?
Well, I think I was honored to be invited to come speak before the caucus. I pretty much said the same things that I said here. You know, I kind of look back a little bit to what I said in 2022 when I testified before the subcommittee on government affairs that was chaired at that time by our great, great dear friend, the late Jerry Conley, that this plan, the plan had some issues. This DFA plan has some issues, and we could see some negative things come out of it if it's not given the proper oversight. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And again, a lot of the things I talked about back then in 2022 did happen. So I kind of refreshed the caucus's mind, and hopefully they go back and listen to that testimony, to those things then, and then talked about kind of where we are now. You know, we have this plan for Delivery for America, or whatever they want to call it now, and you know, the post office has to find funds to if they're going to complete this project. They need funds, and you know, there are some things that they can do. There are some cost cutting that, I mean, there are some ways of getting appropriations that should be pursued that may help them to get the resources. But my biggest concern is that the project, you know, again, what's the return on investment? You know, they're talking about $40 billion, and that $40 billion is probably more like $50 billion to invest in this Delivery for America. But what is the return on investment? I mean, and I say that $50 billion, I say that kind of loosely. I mean, because if you look up to the end of 2024, look at the cost that how much the money the post office paid just to get, and I believe at that time, it was maybe 8 RP&DCs and maybe 30 S&DCs up, you know, if you figure that out, then how much more it's going to take to get the rest of these facilities done, it comes up to another $40 billion. I mean, it started out with a $40 billion price tag on it. And even after, you know, a couple of years, it's still at $40 billion. So I know they need money. And I'm not saying that DFA is a bad plan, but I think any plan that can't be funded and have a return on investment is not a great plan.
In your prepared statement that you made at the caucus roundtable, in a large part it dovetailed nicely with the Postmaster General's legislative plan, that is, recalculate the civil service retirement system to account for the pre-1971 postal department employees, to permit the Postal Service to invest in securities other than simply low-yield treasury bonds, and thirdly, talk about raising its over decades-old debt credit limit, which is now limited at $15 billion. Tell me, in pursuing these legislative goals on behalf of the Postal Service, on behalf of our members, and other things that we are going to pursue, what role do you think NAPS and its members should play in the legislative process?
Well, I think we need to look at our legislation that we're taking to the Hill and those issues and that are supportive. And again, if they're kind of supportive of the initiatives of the leadership of the Postal Service, then and I think they're sound. And then I think those are things we need to pursue. Again, there is revenue that's to be gained, whether it's the recalculation for civil service retirees, which is due, owed us, and should be made. But also these things have to come ultimately, I think, with oversight. I think you can't give up on oversight because, again, one of the drawbacks I always feel is that, you know, we do these initiatives as leadership of the Postal Service, and sometimes it ends up not as efficiently done as it should or could have been done, and that ends up costing more money than it should be costing us. And I think that issue also needs to be monitored more closely by oversight and wherever that oversight body is, to make sure that what the agency is doing is wise and fiscally sound.
Ivan, last question. Your term as president ends this August. As a resident officer, you've outlasted three postmaster generals. and now you're serving under the fourth Postmaster General. Two questions from this. Are there any specific events that you remember fondly over, I'm sure, I hope you do, fondly over your tenure as president? And what would you like to accomplish between now and August?
I think one of my most memorable things was being invited to Megan Brennan induction as our 74th Postmaster General, first woman Postmaster General. I was really honored. I had, or at least felt at that time, a close relationship with Megan. We kind of worked together coming up in the ranks when I was Eastern Region Vice President, and had a good working relationship with her even throughout. You know, that somewhat changed when she became PMG, obviously for some, you know, the political reasons of her position. But I think that was probably the highlight moment of engagement with the Postal Service for me during my time up here as a resident officer. You know, there's so many things that unfortunately I won't be able to do before my tenure is up in August, but I'm proud of what we've been able to accomplish over my 5 years as president of our great association, and over my 12 years as a resident officer. We're rolling out now, full speed ahead, our NAPS Training Academy. It's been something that we've been working on the last few months, and it really has been the last few months working with Dr. Griffin Ernst as running our NAPS Training Academy. And so we're rolling out with our first initiative, which would be assistance in creating your hero profile. That's a subject that we know there's a lack in and there's a need for it. So look for that coming out. Look for our trainers. Our trainers have been trained. Look at our trainers to be reaching out if your email address is a part of our MemberMax network. We'll try to reach out to a broader base, but, you know, obviously we only can work with the emails that we have. So look for those invites coming out that we'll be holding those trainers. They're micro sessions. They're no more than an hour, and that's how we're going to set up the training academy. And we're actually going to see, you'll see in April magazine, there'll be a flyer in there with a QR code. And we're looking for you to submit, you know, what are the things you want to see in these micro training sessions that could help you in your career as an EAS. And those are the things the academy leaders are going to work on developing those micro sessions to put out across our network. So, like I said, it's taken some time to do, but I feel that we wanted to put out a good product. We didn't want to just waste your time sitting on listening to people talking about whatever. We want some interactive dialogue to help you grow in your career. So I'm enthused about that heading into these last few months of my term to serving you as your national president. Obviously, tremendously satisfied and gratified that we were able to move the medium salary of EAS over 20% during my time as your national president. Against one of the things I said in 2014, that's one of the things I said was going to be my focus, was putting more money in your pocket. I feel gratified that I was able to do that, not satisfied, because I think there's always more that we could do. So that's about it.
Ivan, thank you so much for joining us today on NAPS Chat. And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. Please share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make